This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomanosi, former president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus on 181. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Good morning, Lori. Certainly a great day out here once again. You know, it's really interesting. Sunday we were out handing out Mo Brooks, you know, materials, vote for Mo. And we had somebody from one of the Yankee states pass by and said, oh, this is the free state of Alabama. I said, well, you got that right, but it's going to be a little bit freer when we get rid of Ivy. And guess what, folks? Well, I've got someone on the line who is going to make that happen. I am really anxious for you all to get a chance to hear candidate Tim James for governor. Tim, thank you for coming on this morning. Looking forward to talking to you.
Luke, good to be on your show. I wish I was in lovely Baldwin County today, but I'm in central northwest Alabama in Tuscaloosa County, and the weather here is delightful, but they say it's going to get a little bit dicey in the next day or so.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a little bit of weather down here Tuesday, but we're going to be, I think, in good shape when you come down on Thursday, and I'm looking forward to your meet and greet here, and I think you've got a couple of other things scheduled. We can talk about the scheduling and your visits here in just a bit, but I do want to get into, while we have some time, give you an opportunity to, as I suggested in my email to your scheduler, you know, let's let the audience hear about your top three. And again, look, Alabama has a lot of problems. I get that. But, you know, in the interest of kind of focusing on your top three issues, what are they and what are your proposed solutions to those particular issues?
The number one issue in America is that the nation is sort of hanging in the balance. And, you know, we've lost our foundation as a Judeo-Christian nation, and it's showing up in everything, including our education system. We've watched a federal government and even a state government who has just done incomprehensible things as it related to the COVID, the mandates, shutting down churches and small business while letting big boxes stay open, picking and choosing. UAB, as a public university, the governor serves as the chairman of the Board of Trustees, telling 10,000 public employees, doctors, nurses, orderlies, you name it, people that work at UAB, that they have to take a vaccine or they're going to be fired. And, you know, we've never seen this before, and this is tyranny in our face. And these are the things that threaten the fabric of a nation. We're going to talk a lot about public education, K-12. We're at the bottom of the barrel. Yeah, and when I mean really at the bottom, that's not just conjecture.
No, it's exactly the truth.
Thank God for Mississippi now.
Yeah.
We say, they say thank God for Alabama. And we're going to talk about the taxing structure on this gas tax. And we need to give taxpayers some relief, and including a grocery tax, and get rid of the state grocery tax. So those are, you know, some of that is 10,000 feet elevation, and some of is directly in our wheelhouse as of today.
Right. Well, you know, as one of the things that we in the grassroots movement have been arguing for a long time is that you've got to be able to come to grips with the issues that you're talking about. So let's kind of dig into the question of education. I know we're at the 52nd. Our argument is, for the last 10 years, has been it's all about Common Core. And I guess what I'd like to be able to, you know, hear from you is a good plan as to what we need to do to get rid of Common Core. I know that we have presented various plans and options. The governor was supposed to be the fifth vote. We were told by Bonner that if we had four votes on the State Board of Education, she would be the fifth vote. That was BS, okay? So, you know, when you get to be the governor, I'm assuming that you will implement a plan pretty quickly. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, Common Core's got to go. Obviously, if it worked, we wouldn't be where we are. And it's this nationalizing test scores, all of this, it's hogwash. Right now, there's a piece of legislation, and I don't know if anything's happened in the last couple of days in the Senate to redo it with all these coaches. It's nonsense. It's just exactly. More of the same. It's $92 million, I think they're talking. They get a federal grant. At some point, look, you just got to say, keep the federal money. We're not going to do it.
Well, that's SB 171. You know, you're right.
Either you're going to be Washington's going to be your puppet master, or they're not. And you have to at some point just say, we're not going to take the money, and we're going to do it our way, which is the right way. Now, in education, it's, you know, the whole framework now is in large part, how do you feel, how do kids feel, what are they thinking, all this psychobabble.
Right.
And if we return to what we know as a classical core curriculum and teach children to read, to do math, English, biology, history, civics, and we perfect, you don't need to worry about their feelings, because they will go on and become productive citizens. The foundation years, K-1-2-3, is the root, it's the foundation. And it's the answer to the future and how to improve public education is not in some fancy, easy fix. It's the way it's been done. You got to get discipline back into the classrooms where teachers can teach. You got to get strong principals in every school. You got to give them unfettered ability to do what they need to do to fix these schools. And then, of course, you know, the school choice is a big deal. And for the first time in my life, it's really being discussed seriously, where you give moms and dads, regardless of where they come from, rich, poor, black, white, opportunities or chances, or, you know, so they can pull their kids out of underperforming school and use a voucher or a tax credit and put them in private schools, home schools, charter schools, or any other public schools that might have a slot.
Right.
So it's not, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We just got to do what works.
Well,
it really begins in the classroom, and it begins with getting disciplined so that teachers can teach.
I think you're absolutely right that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. One of the things that we've been arguing for and trying to convince some of the more rhino members of the State Board of Education is that all you really need to do to fix this problem is to go back to the 2009 standards, which were absolutely great, considering that in 2003 we were down near the bottom, and by 2009 our scores were excuse me, in the mid-20s. I mean, we were on the right path until Common Core came in. Now, this is where, you know, our argument is, take a look at 2009, look at what Minnesota has done. And again, they never took Common Core. And so we had one of our math specialists who spoke to the Minnesota folks. They liked what they saw in our 2009 standard. So what I'm suggesting here, Tim, is that we have a plan, and we've got the people who can do it. Dr. Robin Leidecker, Kathy Miller, other people who understand what's going on, and I think that they can be very helpful to your approach to this. And I'm hoping that we can, you know, get you, you know, to meet them, talk to them, and give you a sense of just why we have been so opposed to Common Core and why it's necessary to fix it now and not follow SB 171, which, by the way, we are in the process of trying to convince these dumb House members not to support it. It was supposed to be voted on last week. They flipped it over, and we're going to be starting an action alert, you know, today again. Call your legislators and tell them no on 171. So, again, you know, I hate to go on a rant on this, but this has been, as an educator myself, it's absolutely incredible what they have done with Common Core and this, you know, this learning by emotion and all the rest of that stuff. That's part of what you just said, and we don't need to worry about that. We need to just, you know, get in the classroom and do what's right, and the teachers need our help because the there are discipline problems. So I think that, you know, if that's one of your main objectives, I think that you are certainly right where the grassroots is on that. Let me ask you just to develop this gas tax business again. Prior to the gas tax, Ivy, you know, this is 2018. She didn't do any debating during that particular campaign and snuck this gas tax in. I know that we had identified about $63 million that had been going away from ALDOT into different areas. So it seems to me quite clear that if you did away with the gas tax, which I think we should, you'd still have money to do, you know, the roads and stuff like that, above and beyond what was already in the system. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, let's just take a general review of the Department of Transportation in the state of Alabama. The way it's set up is the director of the DOT is a cabinet-level position who serves the governor, serves at the pleasure of the governor, and is effectively an arm of the governor. So the governor has total and complete control over the DOT, how it runs, who runs it, how money is spent, et cetera, et cetera. And I can tell you unequivocally that it has been mismanaged beyond anything that I have ever seen, and it is political beyond anything. I've never seen it like this. And I'll give you several examples of what mismanagement in the DOT looks like. They've spent on the I-10 bridge $50 to $60 million, and the question is, what do you have to show for it? The bridge should have cost about, and I know these numbers, and I know what I'm talking about $900 million. And they took a job that should have been $900 million and added to it and ramped it up all the way up to about $2 billion. And what they were doing is they said, we're gonna rip out the bayway, and we're going to raise the bayway and add additional lanes to it. Never mind that you've got 50 to 75 years of life remaining on the bayway. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. So that's the kind of things that make no sense. And then they have about $30 million of taxpayer money invested in the bridge over the intercoastal in Baldwin County between 59 and the Beach Express, which is the private structure that we built back 20 years ago. So they got $30 million in that, and they have nothing to show for it.
Right.
And then the craziest thing that I've seen is this road that they want to build up West Alabama in it through, you know, they call it an economic driver through the Black Belt from, you know, Mobile County all the way to, I think, Tuscaloosa County. And it's fine. Nothing's wrong with it, except they're talking about building it with state dollars, Lou. So let me explain why that makes no sense. There's the relationship between state dollars and federal dollars. What they call the federal matching dollars is 20-80. So if there's a $1 million project, road project, the state comes up with $200,000, the feds will put in the other $800,000. Well, if we sink $700-800 million into the West Alabama project, you're effectively giving up $2.3 billion in federal matching dollars. Now, who would put $700 million in a project, one project, to forfeit $2.3 billion? You don't have to be a rocket scientist. So I don't know where these people are coming from. I don't know what's in their head. But first things first is we have to get the DOT under new management and get it acting more like a business and less like some bureaucratic thing running, circulating in the universe, and they acting like money grows on trees, because it does not. And that's becoming very clear today with the price of gasoline. And what, you know, they put this gas tax with an escalator clause in it that goes on forever, and now we're beginning to really think about the burden of gas taxes and everything else when it's eating working families' lunches every time they put gas in the car.
Right. well, let me just pull out a little bit on the I-10 bridge business. Okay, clearly, from a political perspective, what Ivey and Cooper did down here has left a bitter taste in everyone's mouth, okay? And so the issue about the tax, and I mean the toll, rather, is something which I know that, you know, you've built a bridge in Gulf Shores and it had a toll, and the argument basically is, hey, if you don't want to use it, then you don't have to pay the toll, just go on 59. And a lot of us believe that that's a correct way to do things, okay? And so the issue of the toll on I-10 has been predicated on if you have a free route. The question of the free route is part of what I'd like you to look at, but I'd also like you to look at the degree to which, you know, your assessment of that need. I mean, we've been arguing down here that, you know, that bridge is a major national security issue. The Fed should be taking care of this. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Shelby could have helped, maybe. He seems to be ready to spend money everywhere. But the point now is, we're anticipating a new ALDOT plan to come out to show how much money the Fed, the state's going to put in. If the state puts in X plus, then the toll that they're talking about now, which is about 250, could, you know, go down. Or if they can't put in X plus, then that toll is liable to be higher. So given the need, and again, I think it's important politically to just be able to hang this over Ivy, because I tell you, there was a bitterness here. She was completely my way or the highway, along with Cooper. And at the end, you know, she came down here and made this statement. Tell us what you want. Well, we told her what she wanted. She has been quiet for two and a half years. Now ALDOT is starting to move, merely because the MPO, the Eastern Shore MPO, and the Mobile MPO started to work together and produce a common plan that seems to be acceptable. But we're still waiting to see what Montgomery is going to do. So, you know, given what I've just suggested to you, you know, how are you going to handle this in terms of the sensitivity of the toll issue, along with the need that's there and the degree to which we ain't getting much help from North Alabama, you know?
Right. So, first of all, the business that we're in is that we're in the private business, and that means what we do is privately funded. We build infrastructure that is an alternate to existing routes. Okay, right. So people choose, I can use a free route, or I can pay a buck or two. That's what we do. This is what we're looking at on I-10. It's totally and completely different. It's an interstate. It's an existing interstate, and it has the captured traffic going east and west. Number one, you should never shut off the tunnels. They should stay free. Number two, all you need to build is a bridge, a major bridge over the river, and use the existing infrastructure and bayway and just widen it, because you have 50 to 75 years of existing life. Now, here's what they'll tell you. They'll say, well, the feds are demanding that we do it. I believe that's hogwash. I don't buy it, and it's an excuse to you know, to try and to overdo this thing and doing. I mean, who rips out a bayway, a perfectly operating bayway for miles across the bay there, when it's got 50 to 75 years of life in it? It's the most absurd thing I've ever seen. Now, when I first began reading about this several years ago, and the drama has in fact gone on for a long, long time, the first thing I asked myself, well, how many cars cross the go through the tunnel there, and how many of those cars or vehicles are out of state? Are they passing through the state? And so, since this thing is a little intel, and this is what we know: about half the traffic that would use if you built a new bridge, about half the traffic would be out of state traffic, not even Alabama people. And whenever you see something like that, the first thing that pops in my mind, if this was my bridge, this is not, but I would be representing the taxpayers, I'd say let's let the out-of-state people pay it. That's what they do in Florida. I mean, you know, millions of out-of-staters are in Florida every day, and their gas tax is real high because they want out-of-staters to pay the high gas tax to build, to, you know, fund the roads in the state of Florida. So what you should do is, once you know exactly the cost, which is $1 billion or less, if you do just what needs to be done, and then you look at your federal grants, and you come up with a net amount of money that's needed to build the project, talking about design, build, construction, inspection, the whole spiel.
Right.
Then you know, okay, if we have to raise some money in the markets in the forms of a revenue bond, you can do that. And then if you already know on the front end that half the users are going to be out-of-state people, and then what I would do, I would probably raise the toll and then give local citizens, Alabamans, a big discount to let the out-of-state pass-through traffic pay the lion's share of a $2 toll. So possibly, and don't hold me to these numbers, that local people are using it maybe for 50 cents, 75 cents, and then out-of-staters who use it, who are driving through every day coming from Louisiana to our beautiful beaches and the Panhandle and vice versa, you know, maybe they're paying $2.50, $2.75. But, you know, we're not going to toll the tunnels. You're going to leave them open. Cochran Bridge stays open. But if we're going to build a big, nice bridge that should, be there for 100 to 120 years and get this crazy drama situation that's been going on for now, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
We've spent all this money on it and have nothing to show for it.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that you're on the right track with this. I think that clearly we need leadership out of Montgomery to make this happen. So I really appreciate your willingness to discuss this with us, and I think that it's an important part, I think, of your campaign to just be able to hone in on, you know, many of the issues that the grassroots has with Ivy. And I know that I listed a few more that I wanted to talk about. You know, we've talked about education, we've talked about, you know, this whole question about the gas tax and the toll road. Let me just ask you this. I mean, I heard on Jeff Poor's show, and I hope that you're going to be able to get on there and speak to them, and, you know, as often as you can, he and Sean Sullivan. But somebody was on there, and I didn't catch the guy's name, but I think he was a Democrat operative, okay? So he has this opinion, which is an opinion, and you know how this is with political junkies and all like that. He really thinks that Ivy, you know, is an incumbent, and unless there's something really bad about her, we're not going to fire her. And I'm thinking to myself, who the hell are you thinking about? Well, there are a lot of people in Alabama that don't want her. And again, the grassroots movement, I think, is the template by which you can just knock her down. And one of these issues is how she governs. You started to talk about it at the beginning of this in terms of the gross tyranny associated with the medical business. Well, I mean, with COVID. So here again, we get into her philosophy of government, which seems to be centralize everything, spend everything you can. I mean, the last time I looked, Republicans should be at least for that government which governs least, governs best, but that ain't happening. So can you just kind of take us down the road of some of the things that you've seen her do, aside from what you've mentioned at the beginning, that really, you know, lend itself to a campaign that basically, you know, says she's not a real Republican, and we're not going to put up with this anymore?
Well, it's the structure around the governor's office, you know, and it's what do Republicans believe and what do they do? Republicans, you know, she pushed forth this casino gambling legislation to put 9 or 10 casinos across the state of Alabama. Not one or two, but 9 all at the same time. Republicans don't do that. The gas tax, just the 10-cent component of it, let alone the escalation clause where it would continue to increase in perpetuity. It was a 55% increase in taxes. I've never heard of that, Lou. That would be the same as if you take your 5% state income tax and increase it 55%, it would jump to 7.5% and would escalate from there forever. People would go crazy. You would have a revolution. Yeah. Republicans are not supposed to do that. Medical marijuana, they are basically passed this marijuana bill, which has absolutely nothing to do with medicine. It's the biggest bait-and-switch con that's ever been put on the people of Alabama. Republicans don't do that. You know, if they thought and spent more time, and I mean this administration and the people that are around her, less time on gambling, less time on marijuana, less time on raising taxes, and more time on K-12, maybe we would not be at the bottom of the barrel. And I can tell you this, as I travel this state, there is a movement under the belly of this electorate that is very unsettled about where this state's going right now. And I think that it's now beginning to show in polling numbers, and I think that we're on a trajectory to win this race. You know, we don't want to win it today. We want to win it in May when, you know, you want to peak at the right time.
Well, that I think you're certainly right about that, and I do think that what they said on the Jeff Boer show was that her latest poll numbers were down to 48. I don't know if that's the same number you have, but just in terms of the polling question, where do you stand on that? Because I think
Luba lost you.
Say again.
Hello.
Hello. Are you there?
Hello.
Can you hear us, Mr. James? Hello.
Hello.
I don't know what happened.
I don't either. Perhaps his cell phone, because as you can see here in the studio, we have done nothing on this end.
Right. Maybe he'll call back. Well, let's just kind of continue these thoughts out here, folks. The reality is that, you know, Governor Ivey has set herself up for a major loss. Oh, I think we're getting him called back. And the arguments that we're making is that we have the situation where the grassroots, I mean, Tim's back on the line. Thank you, Tim. You were mentioning this movement in opposition to what's going on. I know we got cut off there. Just let's follow that thought, because I guarantee you the grassroots is seething with their outrage at the things she's done, like Amendment 1, the gas tax. I mean, the prison, you know, plan, and of course the $6 toll. All of it adds up to someone who should be fired.
Right. There's more material there than you can shake a stick at. And as the public becomes more aware of these things, and you have to understand that there's been so much going on in the world over these many months, people. You know, with COVID and work and all these things, people have just been trying to survive in many ways. And now they're beginning to really begin to think about this governor's race and look at it and think about these issues. And I can just tell you this, as regular Alabama citizens, when we talk about these things, and they begin to, it sinks in that we are now at the bottom of the pack, at dead last, K-12. And when that sinks in, you can start seeing steam coming out of their ears, because they know they have been paying taxes all these years and had no idea that we were in an absolute tailspin in public education throughout Alabama.
Well, I think that that's exactly right. And part of this, too, is that they finally got an insight into why we've been complaining about Common Core for all these years. I mean, they're watching their kids do this stuff, you know, virtually at home, and it spills over into to them. And next thing you say, what in the world are we teaching? And it's not just the math. It's the whole idea of this absolutely anti-American curriculum, which was designed by Obama people and put in play to fundamentally change America. And somehow Bob Riley went along with it. And we had two board members, Stephanie Bell and Benny Peters, who voted against it. The rest of them went along with it. I mean, Tim, I'm telling you, it is so outrageous. And I think that's the message that you're carrying right now. And I think that to a very large degree, it is going to resonate well beyond what these pundits think is going to happen. So just in closing, I've got a couple of minutes left. Do you want to just give us a quick summary of what your campaign is doing and where you're going and how we can expect everything to move in the right direction?
Well, Lou, thank you for having me on the show. And, of course, I think I mentioned at the outset, we find ourselves in Tuscaloosa County today. We're going to be in Baldwin County later this week. Baldwin County, of course, is a Republican stalwart. It's a bastion of conservatism here in Alabama. And we love it. I've lived there. And I just like my message to your listeners out there is join this effort. It's really not a campaign. It's more of a movement. It's like a crusade to take back this state,
yeah.
Take back this nation one state at a time. My website is timjamesgovernor.com. And everyone that's listening in Baldwin County, we have a great team pulled together down there. You can reach out to the campaign, get on board, help us win Baldwin County and Mobile County. And we do that. We're going to win this election, and we're going to start tackling these issues top to bottom. And I can make one promise to you, Lou, and to everyone listening, is we're not going to blink. And when the special interests come at us, they're not going to have any sway whatsoever. We're going to stand firm on these things that really matter, and we're going to take this state back and give it back to the people.
Well, thank you, Tim. That's a great message, and I think we're all looking forward to helping you achieve that. So, once again, great talking to you, and I'll see you on Thursday when we're down here for a town hall that you're going to have in Daphne. Okay, all right. So.
Thank you,
care,
sir.
God bless, and hang in there. Safe travels throughout the state. We'll see you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Where and when is this event?
Okay. The Daphne event is going to be Thursday afternoon, 12:30 to 1:45, at the City Hall, City Council Chambers in Daphne. Again, we'll put this information out, and I'll send you a map so people can see it. The fact of the matter is that, you know, he's got a real chance with the grassroots because of all the things that we've just talked about today. So, folks, hope everyone is doing well. I mean, enjoy the nice weather. Get ready to hunker down maybe by Tuesday. But the fact is, right now is a great day. So go forward, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Take care. God bless. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 in Daphne and the one in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program or you want to tell a friend to listen, you can hear it later at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular broadcasting.